Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Bassam Shakashiri is back with us. He's an emeritus professor of chemistry at UW-Madison, a national proponent for science and education. And we'll talk with him about our responsibility to learn about science and scientists' responsibility to make it understandable. So as we visit with Bassam, I hope you'll join in with your own questions, your own science questions. You can give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send us an email to ideas@WPR.org. ideas@WPR.org. And Bassam Shakashiri, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Always happy to be with you and our listening audience, Larry. And I have to tell you, I'm still getting used to the emeritus part because it hasn't been a year since I've retired, and I've been very proud faculty member at UW-Madison for 51 years. And so I'm still getting used to hearing the word emeritus before before you introduce me to it's a always a joyful experience to be with you, Larry.
Well, and you've probably, even though you're emeritus, you've been a very busy person, I'm sure.
We're always busy, but we're trying to focus on very important, critical, and consequential aspects of the interaction of science with society, you know, and it's important, very important. In society, we make progress by addressing critical issues, and we need both a skilled, creative, and productive workforce, but we also need all of us, the entire citizenry, to be able to judge the risks and to enjoy the benefits of these advances in science and technology. And that's why I'm a strong advocate of science literacy, as you all know.
Absolutely. And, you know, you think about it, I mean, just a day-to-day, there are a lot of ways that science helps us in our daily lives.
Very, very much so. You know, if you stop and think for a moment about the way our society functions today and the way through which we enjoy the benefits of or the great advances in science and technology over the past 100 years or so, since just as a time marker, use the Industrial Revolution as the time marker, much great progress has been made in so many aspects of our daily lives. And we just take them for granted, and that's okay up to a point, but we should think about the effect of these advances, both the beneficial effects and also the not-so-good effects. And one specific example of that is, of course, our high dependence on using fossil fuels as a source of energy. That was an essential part of the Industrial Revolution. But we know more now, much more now, about the consequences of putting so much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and the consequences of that on global warming. And this is a topic that I'm focusing on, along with a couple of other major topics. It's all related to having a citizenry that gains and enjoys what they call science literacy. Science literacy does not require a detailed knowledge of any specific science field, but rather, I'd say, a broad appreciation and understanding of what science is capable of achieving, and equally important, what science cannot accomplish. Science is not the answer to all the human questions that we have. But Larry, science literacy is necessary for the democratic process to work. We make distinctions between knowing science and then the action that we should take as a result of science. So let me just make one statement, and this is posted on my website and has been there for many years, for decades. Science literacy enlightens and enables people to make informed choices and to be skeptical. You know, in science, we're always skeptical, but also to reject shams, quackery, unproven conjecture, and especially to avoid being bamboozled into making foolish decisions where matters of science and technology are concerned. Science literacy is for everyone. It's for scientists, for artists, humanists, all professionals, for youth and adults alike, for everyone. And that's why I continue my work in this very important area of connecting science with society. And I'm eager to hear from our listeners and hear from you as well as we visit one more time. One more time. We're visiting, by the way, Larry, just before Independence Day.
Yes.
You know what happens on Independence Day, right?
Well, for one thing, fireworks.
Well, that is one thing. That is the that is a visible and loud experience. And fireworks are very, very attractive, and because a lot of energy is released in the form of sound, in the form of light. It's also released in the form of heat, but we don't sense it because the fireworks are way up in the sky, and we don't shield the heat. But all of these pyrotechnics are appealing to the senses for what we see, what we hear, and we think about what it is that's going on here. The science of pyrotechnics, by the way, I invite everyone in the listening audience to come to my website where I have a big entry about the science of pyrotechnics, the science of fireworks. And my website is scifun.org, scifun.org, where we have much more detail about how fireworks are put together, how they are used, and why they cause these great feelings that we have. And I want to emphasize, fireworks should be set off by professionals because of the all-important aspect of safety that we deal with. But Larry, one more thing, if I may, about Independence Day. Yes,
yeah.
It's about fireworks. Yes, it's about getting together and enjoying barbecue event and so on, but it's really about Independence Day. And yeah, every year between May 24th, which is the date of my being sworn in as a U.S. citizen, and July 4th, I reread the Declaration of Independence, and I also reread the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights is part of the Constitution, but I read these three documents very carefully and try to affirm the true meaning of the words that are there and how they relate to society today. The connection with society today is very, very important.
Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today. We're talking science and science literacy with him. And if you have a question or comment, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Well, you read a lot these days about the divisions in the country and so forth, whether our independence, whether we're going to be able to keep our country is what's the role of science in all this?
I think understanding the proper connections between advances in science and technology and our culture is crucial. And this is why I advocate having meaningful conversations with each other about all aspects, all challenges that we face, no matter whether they are political or social or religious, just to have respectful conversations, respecting each other as fellow human beings. I'm not saying we respect the ideas or the thoughts of them that some people that I might disagree with. I respect them as fellow human beings, and I listen to what they're saying. What is important is to listen when we have a conversation and to try to understand what the other person or the other group is saying and do it in respectful ways, in trusting ways. We have to have trust in each other. We have to have trust in the ideals that we look up to. And so we should also be careful and focused on the great challenges that we face today in society. The challenge of global warming is one. Another challenge is the finite resources that we have, the quality of water that we drink, the food that we enjoy. We should be concerned about spreading disease. We should be concerned about a variety of such important aspects. But to me, one of the most important ones is to deal directly with basic human rights, especially the right for everyone to benefit from scientific and technological progress. We've made tremendous progress in science and technology. We've made them in the medical sciences and all the sciences. And we should be focusing on using our human rights, the human rights that everyone in society enjoys, for the benefit of the common good of society. And all of these ideas, Larry, relate to science literacy and the connections between science and society. But I'd just like to say one more time, and I'll probably say it again, it's important to engage in meaningful, respectful conversations and to listen and to be productive in these conversations. No matter how strongly we disagree about an issue, we should behave as responsible citizens, and we should remind ourselves especially of that, not only on Independence Day, but mm-hmm. Every day.
Every day.
Every day. Yeah. Every day.
Tom in Green Bay has a question, I believe. Let's go there. Tom, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Dr. Shakashiri, do you have a website that I can go to and find some of your experiments and things that I can do with my grandkids? I rescued a microscope from a high school, took three of them and put one together. And looking and seeing that stuff. And I'm looking for more I can do with them.
Okay.
I on my website, we have scifun.org, scifun.org, or if you Google whatever search engine you use, Science is Fun, it'll take you to the homepage. In the upper left corner, you will see an entry that deals with experiments you can do at home. Click there, and you'll find many, many experiments to do at home. They're easy to do, but they are really aimed at increasing the participation of family members, working together, asking questions, engaging in meaningful conversations about what happens. Here's one that it comes to mind right now. We have an experiment where we use raisins.
Raisins.
Do you know that? Do you know that experiment, Tom?
No, I never heard of the one with raisins.
Okay, wait. Well, what you need a carbonated beverage and raisins, and what you do is you put the carbonated beverage in a glass, and you drop about 5, 6, 7, 8 raisins, and you just watch and see what happens. Now, I'm not going to tell you right now because I don't want to rob you of the joy of your own discoveries. I'm trying to get you and others in the listening audience to fully participate in the process of science. And we have many such experiments, more involved in that. But we also have a YouTube channel on that website. We have many entries on that website. So please go there. And if you come up with some suggestions for us to add another experiment, we will be happy to look at it and to check it out. Everything we post has been tested and has been found to be useful by teachers, by families, by youngsters, by adults. So scifun.org, scifun.org.
There you go,
Thank
Tom.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Trina LaSousa, our engineer today, Joan Ledoux, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, and our guest today, Bassam Shakashiri, Emeritus Professor of Chemistry at the UW-Madison. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's turn to Jeff in Madison next. Hi, Jeff. Thank you for calling.
Greetings. Greetings, Larry, and greetings, Professor Shakashiri. This is your old student that has been to most of your Christmas shows, if you remember.
Yes, Jeff. Good to hear your voice again. I wish we were together in person.
Well, I'll just make this quick little plea here. You know, one last, you know, request to try to put on one more, you know, Christmas show, or even I know you did a fireworks show, you know, around the 4th of July. But, again, keep that in the back of your mind. But as a background, that I'm now a professor at UW Parkside, and along the way here, I've written a children's book. And so what do you think is the best way, because I know you've published a lot of books, how do you get a book published so, you know, so I can train kids, you know, to read and things like that?
That's a congratulations, Jeff. As I say, it's always good to hear from you. Why don't you send me a link to your book? I'll look at it, and I'll be able then to give you informed advice as to what you might follow. And thank you for making the suggestion again about doing more Science is Fun programs. Jeff and everyone else, I want to tell you that all of our in-person programming has been suspended because of the virus. It's been now over almost two and a half years, we have not done any in-person programs. And I'm being very careful about not lowering my guard about doing in-person programs. So I'm doing a lot of workshops, a lot of conferences on Zoom. Right now I'm speaking from my home with Larry. I'm not even in the studio. I haven't seen Larry in 2.5 years.
Yeah.
I miss you, Larry.
I'll miss you too.
So I appreciate your appeal and others. I hear from people all the time. How do I get tickets to the next one? I did Science is Fun programs for 50 years. We did the Christmas program that many years. And by the way, you can access a lot of these programs on the website. Just go to our YouTube channel. Just go to scifun.org, browse around, you'll find them. So, Jeff, congratulations, and let me hear from you via email.
And Jeff can reach you, if you go to, I assume your email or way to contact you is at scifun.org, correct?
Yes. At the bottom of the homepage, you'll find an email address, and use that.
All right, Jeff. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Aubrey in Land O'Lakes. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
All right. Wonderful. A little out of service here. I'm 25. I have a master's degree in environmental management, and continuing to look for jobs after the pandemic. I heard you talking a little bit about science communication, and I was curious to see if you had any ideas on jobs in science communication or organizations that would be hiring in that field.
Thank you for your question, and I'm not going to act as a placement service. But I'll just tell you, there are many organizations in industry and some in academe also, in professional societies, that are looking for people who can help improve the connectivity between that organization and the general public in the area of science, in the areas of environmental science. So I don't have a specific reference for you, but I'd like to suggest that you visit the website of the Life Science Department at UW-Madison. Do you have such information there, Larry?
I was going to say, Aubrey, we have, I'm a faculty member in the Department of Life Sciences Communication, and I can tell you that there are a lot of jobs for our graduates go out and work in a variety of fields, everything from health to they work for science related businesses. They work in government. They, you know, they're just a broad, very broad range for our students who get a bachelor's or master's or even PhD in science communication through our department. And you might just go online to just go UW-Madison Life Sciences Communication and take a look there. And you'll even see my email there. And if you want to give me an email, shoot me an email, I'd be happy to talk with you a bit more about that. But depending on your credentials and what your training is, I can tell you there are a lot of jobs in science communication right now. Our students don't seem to have any trouble getting jobs. There you go. Thank you so much. Sam, you were going to add something.
Yeah, Audrey, may I say one more thing about science communication? What's important, no matter what job you get, to keep in mind that it is science that's being communicated with the emphasis on knowing the science and knowing what one is talking about so that we improve the connectivity in science communication between science and the people that we are communicating with. And again, I appeal to you and everyone else who cares about the quality of life in our society to be respectful in all aspects of communication.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling, and I hope you take a look at our website. I'd love to have you take a look at it and get a hold of me if you'd like as well, or even our student services coordinator, Tara, is always happy to add to that as well. You can join in, too, if you have a question or comment. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Luann and Madison wondered if you could speak to new research in DNA, if there's anything going on that you are familiar with.
There is lots that's going on. I'm not up to date on the latest thing, but there's so much research and all of this research that has helped us as a society in addressing COVID-19. This research has been going on for a long time, and our ability to develop the vaccines and to benefit from the vaccines and understand the consequences. But, Luann, I am not up to date on the very latest in those areas. I would suggest that if you're interested in that and interested in the technical scientific aspects, to once again ask this question to someone who is in that area, and I'm not.
Thank you very much. You could email in at ideas@wpr.org as well. Love to hear from you. Our phone 800-642-1234. You know, you were talking about global warming and its effect on our daily lives, and talked about science and communicating just now. How much should scientists be involved in the politics of climate change, do you think?
Very much involved, Larry, and involved once again in respectful discourses, because there are people who deny that climate change is affected by human activity. There are natural causes for climate change, but not as severe in consequences as our putting the carbon dioxide up in the air. And what's important for all of us is in science is to engage in addressing matters that affect our use of fossil fuels as a source of energy. We just have to reduce how much carbon dioxide we're putting up in the air. We not only reduce it, we should stop it. And that has, of course, economic dimensions. It has social dimensions. This is not a switch that you turn off. This is something that all of us have to work on together. And the role of the scientist is to respectfully engage in a conversation, not a lecture about you shall do this and you must do that. It is to understand what are the feelings and the emotions of our fellow citizens and how their lives are being affected by global warming. I'll give you one example. It's clear now from much research that people who enjoy fishing are not able to catch walleye as much as they used to before. So that could be a very good way to open a conversation about why that is and how that is. Is that related to global warming? Is it related to how much oxygen is in the water? Is it why is it walleyes? All kinds of meaningful, informative, mutually informative conversations about such matters should be done. And the scientists have a responsibility to do that. Scientists are very good about telling each other. We tell each other very well about our own research. We use technical jargon. We go to scientific conferences. That is important and crucial for the progress of science. But for connecting science with society, we need to develop the skills to listen to others and to understand what it is that they're concerned about and try to come up with examples such as the one I just made or quality of water. You know, there's so many of them and do that. And scientists have the ability to do that, have the capability to do that. And we should change capability to ability. And as I keep saying, Larry, throughout, all the conversations have to be respectful. And let me say one other thing about conversations that relate to global warming or any other scientific matter. The first purpose of a conversation is to have another conversation. And that's why I say listening is important to what the concerns are and how they're dealt with. And if someone asks me a question I don't know the answer to, just like I did now, I just say, I don't know.
You do encounter, I'm sure you encounter a lot of misinformation when talking about science with people. You know, it can be hard for, let's say, somebody who's not a scientist, then let's call them the non-science person. How can the non-science person address those kinds of things?
This is happening more so now, and everyone is more aware of it because of COVID. So in science, we make progress by making discoveries, by asking questions, by coming to some conclusions. But science evolves, it changes. There is no single answer that stays there forever. So understanding the nature of the information that is being discussed is related not only to misinformation, Larry, but also disinformation. There are people who deliberately tell the wrong things. They have a point of view and they use science or science aspects to make their own point of view. So this is why I say scientists have to participate in our society, whether it's political or social or cultural, because scientists are the beneficiaries of the support and trust of society at large. Science and society have what is essentially a social contract that enables us to make great intellectual achievements, but it also comes with mutual expectations of benefiting the human condition and protecting our planet. And that's what scientists should be willing and able and successful in, speaking about science in general, the process of science, not only their own specific subspecialty. And there's so many programs at UW Madison and elsewhere around the country, around the world, that aim to address this. It is not only a scientist who has the responsibility to address misinformation, it is the responsibility of the non-science portion to also continue to ask the questions and to probe and engage in what I keep calling this meaningful, respectful conversation.
People, to become more informed, one way to do it, of course, is reading books. And I'm wondering if you have a reading list for us. You know, we like to do reading lists at this time of the year. What books can you recommend?
Very good, Larry. Before I answer that question directly, I'd like to once again ask everyone in the listening audience to have a good look at the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution, especially as we approach Independence Day. So that's one specific suggestion. A book that I highly recommend is called The Overstory. It's a book by Richard Powers. It was published about 4 years ago or so. It received high accolades. It's a story about trees. But Larry, it's not a story about trees. It's about people. It's about people and trees. The Overstory is the book I highly recommend for everyone to read. It makes a lot of good points, again, about our connections with nature. We as human beings connecting ourselves and being connected with nature. So that's one book. Another book, if some people have read this book, this is an old book. It's called Silent Spring. It was published by Rachel Carson decades ago. I recommend, if you read that book, perhaps you can share it with other people. But Silent Spring by Rachel Carson. So those are two books that relate to science and the environment. There are other books that... By the way, The Overstory is a novel. That's what it is. It's a novel. For teachers and faculty members who are in science, I recommend that they read my chemical demonstrations books and begin to do more of the experiments that are described there and think about the points of making scientific phenomena and scientific principles related to changes in society. So there you go. Two general books for everyone, and a specific five volume series published by the UW Press to faculty members and science teachers. And also, I would say to parents and grandparents, maybe you can gift the high school science teacher one of my books. That'd be good.
Yeah. All right. You've been doing this 50 years and been at UW Madison for over 50 years. How have things changed and what's still the same?
Oh, boy. Lots of changes, Larry. What's still the same, let me emphasize, what's still the same is the eagerness of those who attend UW Madison to learn and to become responsible citizens in society. What has changed, we've got more subspecialties now than we've had 20, 25, 50 years ago. There's been more emphasis on technical training, which is good. We need technically skilled people to address the grand challenges that we face in society, but we need to be sure that we understand the environment that we're in. This is going back to the connectivity between being technically skilled and also communicating successfully with society. I would say this last part I mentioned here is changing, but it hasn't changed significantly. This is why I continue to strongly advocate science literacy for everyone. What is science literacy? It's an attitude. Science literacy is an attitude that doesn't develop overnight. We just work on it all the time. We live it. It's like personal hygiene. And what's important is that we act. We become involved. We vote. When there's an opportunity for us to vote, we must vote. We consider joining the Citizen Climate Lobby group. We engage with other groups and organizations that are advocating the betterment of our society. I'd like to see more of that happening instead of only focusing on the subspecialties. I'm not saying we're focusing only on the subspecialties, but I'm saying that that should happen, but we should always put it in context. And it's such a joy to see this happen, not only at UW-Madison, but also across the country. I'd like to see more of it happen in our school systems.
Bassam, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Always a treat. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry, and thank you, everyone, for listening.
Bassam Shakashiri, Emeritus Professor of Chemistry at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Well, we have a couple of other professors coming up next. Guys that know a lot about climate and weather, our weather guys, must be the last Monday of the month. Steve Ackerman, John Martin, our guests next to talk climate and weather. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.